morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. presidential candidates make their final pitches with five more days until the November 5th election.
After years of building up foreign nations, defending foreign borders, and protecting foreign lands, we are finally going to build up our country, defend our borders, and protect our citizens. It's called America First.
We'll explain why the United States does not choose its president by popular vote. We'll also have a viewpoint from Africa. Senegalese political parties are campaigning for November's parliamentary elections. Guinea's military junta bans over 50 political parties. Botswana's president defends the country's electoral body as the nation votes.
We're dealing with a sensitive, emotive process that will always bring about complaints, will bring about challenges that would lead even to going to the courts.
And a member of Malawi's commission investigating a plane crash resigns. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The two candidates for U.S. president are making what they call their closing arguments to voters in this final week before the election. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti brings us sights and sounds from the two rallies.
In this final week, the presidential campaigns take on the air of a court case.
Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
These are closing arguments, with voters acting as the jury until Tuesday. Former President Donald Trump making his case about the economy and immigration in Madison Square Garden, the epicenter of New York City.
Kamala Harris has shattered our middle class. After years of building up foreign nations, defending foreign borders, and protecting foreign lands, we are finally going to build up our country, defend our borders, and protect our citizens. It's called America First.
The 20,000-seat arena was packed. Some voters waited overnight to get in.
It'd be kind of cool to have a role model, but honestly, I think Trump will do a really good job with the administration and with foreign affairs.
He's outspoken, he's unscripted, and he resonates with me.
I really see that Trump is going to take us to the next level.
For her rebuttal, Vice President Kamala Harris chose the ellipse in Washington with the backdrop of the White House, the future home for one of the presidential contenders.
It is time for a new generation of leadership in America.
Harris laid out her own vision for America, seeking to strike a contrast with Trump.
It is time to turn the page on the drama and the conflict. I will enact the first ever federal ban on price gouging on groceries. Cap the price of insulin and limit out-of-pocket prescription costs for all Americans.
Again, tens of thousands attended.
The first woman president, I would love to see that in my lifespan.
I am a gay man, and me personally, I like to keep my rights.
She says she supports abortion rights, pro-choice, a woman's right to choose, and I believe that she will ensure that there is not a national abortion ban enacted under her presidency.
Given how close the race is, the election may be too close to call on Tuesday night. Lawsuits are already underway in some states over ballot counting and voter eligibility. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News on the Ellipse.
The United States does not choose its president by popular vote. That is done by the Electoral College. The selection of each state's electors is a two-part process. Todd Belt is professor and director of political management for George Washington University's master's program. He explains to viewers Carol Van Dam what happens in the other 48 states and takes a deep look at some Americans' distrust in the electoral process.
All the rest of the states are winner take all. Even if you win the state by just one vote, you get all the electors from that state.
And this is something that I don't even think all Americans understand, you know, with the Electoral College, but it's good to explain that. So it's a two-part process. First, the political parties in each state choose the slates of potential electors. And then second, during the election, the voters in each state cast their ballot for president, but they're really selecting basically their electors, right?
They're selecting one slate of electors or the other, yes.
I think a lot of people are curious, what types of people get chosen to be these electors and who chooses them?
These are party insiders who are committed to one candidate over another.
That's it in a nutshell.
That's really okay. It. Yeah. You have to apply to be an elector and you get certified by the presidential campaign that you want to be the elector for.
Let's talk a little bit about the mistrust that has been sown into this election. There's more than a few voters that have talked about this with this particular U.S. election process. And how much does that factor in to this razor-thin election? And what will it mean if the election results don't go the way that those voters mm-hmm. expect them to go? What could that mean for our country?
Right. Well, we already know that Donald Trump is casting doubt on the integrity of the election, as he did in 2020. And I think that both sides have close to a dozen lawyers each and are preparing for potential lawsuits. And that may occur where there may be challenges of the electoral count in different states. And I think that this does a real damage to our trust in our institutions and democracy. If we can't really be a democracy that runs on the will of the people if people don't believe that the will of the people is being expressed through the ballot. And that is problematic.
Is there a reason for people to be suspicious of the way the U.S. election process works?
No, the U.S. election process is extremely safe and secure. In fact, Donald Trump's own Homeland Security person said that it was the safest election in 2020 and most secure that we've ever had.
What about field operations? It seems like we're mm-hmm. hearing in these battlegrounds, the states, these seven that you have talked about, is that mm-hmm. Harris, the vice president, Kamala Harris, has far more paid staff members,
That's
field
right.
offices, too. Is that true? It sounds like you're saying yes. And how much does that make a difference?
There's a real difference in terms of the approach of both candidates. Traditionally, these field offices are extremely important, but Donald Trump is not a regular candidate. He takes more of a top-down approach. He likes to appeal to people through the media, through the podcasts, through social media, and try to get his voters out that way. Whereas you see Kamala Harris running a much more traditional campaign. And in fact, these field offices were really established when Joe Biden was running for president. And Joe Biden had a real strong fundraising advantage because it takes money to rent offices and pay staff and to get them out there. So she has a much bigger advantage in all these swing states in terms of having the offices and the paid staff and a lot of volunteers. But that's really about getting people out on election day and convincing what few people who are there going door to door, knocking on doors, making telephone calls, and speaking to people's neighbors. The ground game is still very important.
That's Todd Bell, professor and director of political management at George Washington University's master's program, speaking to viewers Carol Van Dam here in Washington, D.C. How do Africans view the 2024 U.S. presidential campaign and the likely impact of its outcome, no matter who wins next week? Brenda Rupa is a member of the Women's Wing of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party.
The 2024 U.S. election is expected to have a major impact on the international community as a whole, not just Africa. The contours of Vice President Kamala Harris' foreign policies are unclear. Should former President Donald Trump be elected, it's expected that the United States will retrench from global governance and take a more nationalistic approach. However, we do not anticipate major changes in U.S. engagement with Tanzania, no matter who is elected. In light of overall continuity in U.S. foreign policy during recent decades, I must say, though, some Africans are worried about possibly stricter migration policies and less cooperation with the continent should Donald Trump return to White House, as it's well known that he didn't visit one African country or even visit the continent itself, not once, when he was in office. In regards to democracy, we do hope that African country leaders and presidents can learn that democracy is fairly practiced in the Western countries and hopefully learn that it's not the end of the world when they leave power. Because it seems that a lot of these African leaders don't want to leave power for the fear of really the unknown. So we do hope that they can learn and practice democracy in future elections, especially in future elections of Tanzania.
Brenda Rupa is a member of the women's wing of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. She was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 31st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Botswana's president, Mokgweetsi Masisi, has defended the country's electoral body amid criticism of its preparedness with Wednesday's early voting. It has been marred by a slow process and inadequate voting booths. Masisi, who is seeking a second and final term, told journalists after casting his vote that he is confident of victory. Nkudise Dube reports from Habaroni.
Masisi, who voted in his home village of Moshupa, southwest of Habaroni, says he is content with the conduct of the Independent Electoral Commission. The electoral body has faced criticism from opposition parties on how it has handled the pre-election period.
We are confident about the independence of the IEC. You know, what is perceived as a lack of independence of IEC is really almost cosmetic. We have a parliamentary system and a protocol wherein the executive of the government presents budgets on behalf of everything else, the judiciary included. Some are suggesting for the IEC to be perceived to be independent, they must go to parliament and present a budget, but they are not members of parliament. How do you get an independent body to account to politicians?
Early voting faced challenges, including some polling stations opening late. IEC spokesperson Osupile Maroba acknowledges the difficulties but says they were resolved early enough to allow voters to cast their ballots.
There were fewer ballot booths as they were supposed to be, and it's something that has been attended to. Some areas, because of the people who are engaged to conduct elections, they may have some issues on how to handle the ballot boxes, particularly that where do you close the ballot box and where do you open the ballot box, and they will have to delay commencement of the poll so that they correct that issue.
On the eve of the election, opposition parties took the IEC to court, questioning the Electoral Commission's readiness. Maroba says the parties were within their rights to seek the intervention of the courts.
We are dealing with a sensitive, emotive process that will always bring about complaints, will bring about challenges that would lead even to going to the courts. As the laws of Botswana allows, anybody who is not happy with the process has a way to try to seek a redress.
Meanwhile, President Masisi says the time spent at the polling stations could be improved through a digital voting system. Some voters were at the polling stations as early as 4 a.m. local time. One voter, Musedi Ginosi, says he ran out of patience due to the slow process.
I don't know. Maybe I'll go back later. I mean, the process is very slow. I waited for more than 3 hours to vote. And I think the verification process takes forever, which is discouraging for us as voters.
The elections come as the country faces an economic downturn due to weak global diamond sales. The opposition has criticized Masisi's party for failing to provide solutions. Polling stations were expected to close at 7 p.m. local time, with early results expected on Thursday morning. Mkondisi Dube, VOA News, Habaroni, Botswana.
Political parties in Senegal are campaigning in a parliamentary race that will decide the extent to which new president Bassirou Diomaye Faye will be able to implement his agenda. President Faye's PASTEF party is competing for a majority that would secure his mandate, but former ruling parties have formed a rival coalition, including the country's influential ex-president Macky Sall and Abdoulaye Wade. Kaita Sila is the grants administrator at the Open Society Initiative for West Africa. She tells viewers Douglas Mpuga that there has been some violence since the start of the campaign.
It's going on with violence, as you may have seen in the media. violence mainly between the coalition that is led by the mayor of Dakar and then the leading presidential coalition. Attacks, even the headquarters of Barthélemy Diaz, who's the mayor of Dakar, their headquarters was burned down. Investigations are ongoing. And really violent rhetoric from both camps, even though the president had to come out last week to address the nation, you know, to call everybody to calm and peaceful election, as Senegal has been known for peaceful elections.
Yeah, as you say, the president came out and called on those involved to show responsibility, restraint and moderation. And he also called, he said the elections will be free, democratic and transparent. Do you think that's possible?
I think that's possible. I mean, even though Senegal elections don't get rigged on election day, and I'm sure it's true for probably many African countries, elections are rigged before even the election. And this speaks to how elections are organized. Because as you know, the president dissolved the National Assembly recently, and he had 90 days to organize the election, but he decided to organize it in less than 90 days. And by that time, he consulted the Constitutional Council, who told him he could dissolve the assembly and go ahead and organize the election. He had the date of the election, but he didn't communicate it, which puts opposition party in a difficult situation because they were informed very last, while the camp for the president knew that the election was going to happen and were already preparing for the election. So there was biases even in the process. But in terms of the election day, I don't foresee any rigging happening.
Do you think President Faye will achieve his goal of getting the majority?
From what we see, because President Faye, as you know, Ousmane Sonko, the prime minister, is the one who's leading that coalition. I think 3 weeks ago, he organized a big rally at one of the main stadiums in Senegal. And actually, people who were going had to pay 1,000 CFA as their contribution to the campaign. And that room was so packed. From what they said, they gathered about 5 million CFA. At least they still really believe in especially Ousmane Sonko, who's leading the coalition. There's still a strong buy-in from the youth that things will change. And then the narrative that there's nothing in the coffers, that the former regime has a siphon of all the money. So you guys really need to bear with us. We are fixing things up. They have this reassuring speech that all of this is happening because it's the fault of the former regime and that we are fixing things up. And when we do, things will get better.
Kaita Sila is a grants administrator at the Open Society Initiative for West Africa. She spoke with viewers Douglas Mupuga from Dakar. Political parties in Guinea have been dissolved and others suspended and placed under observation by the Ministry of Territorial Administration and Decentralization. Reporter Karine Kamara has more from Conakry.
The Ministry of Territorial Administration and Decentralization says it has dissolved 53 political parties. It has also suspended some for at least 3 months and placed 67 under observation. The parties under observation include the former ruling RPG or Rally of the People of Guinea Party, or former President Alpha Condé, the Union of Democratic Forces of Guinea, UFDG, the main opposition party of Selun Dalein Diallo, and the Democratic Union for Renewal and Progress, or UDRP, of Edward Zotomo. Zotomo describes the action by the Ministry of Territorial Administration and Decentralization as a mere intimidation, but says no matter what, the transition will end on the 31st of December.
67 political parties that are under observation, and we are in that category of. So what I see is just a way to intimidate. The timing of it is what is really curious. But December 31st, 2024, that's the deadline. Past that time, we have to get ready to set a civilian transition to bring the country back to constitutional order.
The parties were dissolved and suspended after what the Ministry of Territorial Administration and Decentralization calls an evaluation exercise of the groups. It accuses some of the parties of supplying fake documents during the exercise. Balaya Diallo is a member of the Coalition of Civil Society Organizations. He says the action by the ministry is a bad news for democracy in Guinea.
La plupart de ces partis politiques aujourd'hui se retrouvent au creux de la vague.
He says majority of the political parties now finds themselves in the midst of the storm. He says all Guinea's development partners are watching closely and understand that democracy has faced a setback in the country. Both major political parties, the former ruling RPG party of former President Alpha Conde and the UFDG of main opposition leader Selun Dalein Jallo, have been placed under observation. Neither has commented on the issue, but their supporters and observers have accused the junta of muzzling the opposition. On the streets of Conakry, people reacted to the news.
What I think will be good for the junta is for them to return the country to a democratic rule. At the end of this year, Guineans are suffering. The country is at a standstill. People are scared to express their views on how the country is being managed by the junta. Human rights abuses are happening on a daily basis and with impunity.
According to sources, a delegation from the Economic Community of West African States is still in Guinea at any time. But the position says any move by ECOWAS to approve the extension of the transition beyond December 31st will not be accepted. The position blames ECOWAS of siding with the junta. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
In Malawi, a civil society member of the commission investigating the plane crash that killed Vice President Saulos Chilima and eight others in June this year has resigned. Sylvester Namiwa, executive director of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, says he resigned because of the lack of transparency. He tells me that Malawians deserve public testimonies for the credibility of the process.
The moment the commission was announced, Malawians took to the social media protesting the composition. Secondly, I made a decision to participate in that commission because I was in the forefront calling for the same. So I told myself that I'm going into this commission carrying all those unanswered questions from millions of Malawians. But then going into the commission, we were almost defeated on arrival because of the composition itself. So we needed to do something that should win back the trust of the citizenry. So I thought that since the terms of reference were backing a possibility of having public inquiry, implying that all the witnesses invited should give their testimonies through a live broadcast, by doing so, I thought it will bring us the much needed trust and the confidence we needed. Because by the end of the day, we were supposed to come up with a report that should be accepted by Malawians. So it was unfortunate that the commission shut down that decision. Now that I had no support, there was no reason whatsoever why I should continue. This is why I decided to resign with immediate effect.
But Sylvester, your critics say that your demand for the witnesses to testify publicly is a form of mob justice.
That's the beauty of democracy. We are given an opportunity to have a diverse opinions. However, I was not demanding for too much. Like I alluded to, it is contained in the terms of preference. That is the blueprint that led to the formation of the commission. Secondly, the demand I'm making is fully backed by the Commission of Inquiry Act. So it is not coming from the blues. More than above that, it is a demand from the representatives of the bereaved family that in order for us to trust this inquiry, we need to go public.
I'm assuming you disagree with those who say that your resignation reveals your lack of commitment to the process.
I don't like beating my own drum. I don't like taking a defensive mode. I think they are entitled to their own opinion. However, I need to emphasize that Malawians are not tough. Malawians knows what was best for them. Malawians, really, they have got their own aspirations and goals.
Sylvester Namiwa is the executive director of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives of Malawi. He was speaking with us from Lilongwe. And that's it for this Thursday, October 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a great day, and please be safe whatever you do.